From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Mr. Arrow Shelf today, Mr. Hunter Dusing. And it's an OG Midnight Movie Cowboys today because it's just Stuart with me today.
Hey, what's up, you mental midget?
Yeah. I am dumb, so that works.
Oh.
It was just me and John last week, and just me and Stu this week.
Yeah, I got to say as well that I actually enjoyed that episode that you guys did. And funnily enough, you were talking about the planet. I think one of you were talking about the Planet of the Apes. And ironically, I've actually been tearing through the original Planet of the Apes series on Blu-ray just for some reason. I'm like, oh.
Just got the itch.
Yeah, I really did. And I mean, obviously, you know, for me, the last two, the Rise of and Dawn of, they don't exist as people who know me know. But yeah, I was just really sort of itching to, catch up on some Planet of the Apes, and yeah, so that was that. So yeah, I enjoyed that one about whatever it was, Naked Spur. There you go.
Yeah, I went back and listened to it, which I don't often do, and I was like, that was a good episode.
Do you ever critique your voice when you listen to back?
Oh yeah, I'm
the same with myself. Yeah,
sometimes if I've had a couple drinks, like while I'm recording, I can tell like my voice is a little altered, and I go, "Oh fuck," you know. I'm gonna listen back to this and go,
"Yeah."
But like I was doing that last year, a few shows ago, but I don't know. I don't know if I could tell when I listen back to it, but you know, I become really self conscious about that.
Yeah.
So before we get started with today's show, which is a Mr. Arrow Shelf show, I wanted to do a quick dedication because we've lost one of the earliest podcasts I knew about. Host Vince Rotolo of the B-Movie Cast passed away as we're recording this on Thursday, April 28th. He passed away of a heart attack yesterday. And very sad to hear that. I occasionally listen to Vince's show. I wasn't like a regular listener, but like I always heard his ads on like Cinema Slave and these podcasts. And you know, he's kind of known for his sort of dry delivery. You know,
yeah, very much. So.
You know, very much like, hey, this is Vince Rotolo, the B Movie Cast. You know,
like very deep. He's like, he's Vince Rotolo, the B Movie Cast.
Yeah, we're going to talk about exploitation driving.
This week it's Glen O'Glenda by Ed Wood.
Yeah, you know, I just love that Famous Monsters of Filmland. You know? Yeah. But really nice dude. I was friends with him on Facebook. You know, nice guy. You know, just
Do
really
you know
sad.
How old he was when he passed?
I don't. Maybe his Facebook says, because dudes are more prone to post how old they are than girls are. So let me see.
Girls always lie about their age.
Yeah, they usually take the year off.
Vain.
He was born in 51. So
63.
In his 60s.
Jesus. 2016. What is your problem? Seriously.
I know.
I tell you what, I'm probably going to get a bit of heat for this, but I'm actually more bummed about Vince Rotolo dying than I am Prince, to be honest with you. I don't care. I mean, I get it. Like,
well, and Vince,
our friend Richard's a massive fan of Prince. We know that.
Oh, and yeah. Like, Richard must be reeling because he lost Vanity and Prince in the same year.
Yeah. Well, that was like 2 months apart. It's like, that's some, filthy Animal Taylor and Lemmy shit right there. They died a couple of months apart as well.
Very close together. But no, Vince was kind of closer to our community, so.
Yeah, he was. I never knew the guy, but I mean, I knew his voice and his show, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I just knew him vaguely online, you know.
Yeah.
We never were, you know, friends or knew each other really, but, you know, it's the first time I've heard of a podcaster like that I knew dying, so it kind of made me sad to read that. But anyway, so this episode's dedicated to the memory of Vince Rotolo, and it's appropriate since we are talking about the type of movie he likes. We're talking about the Bride of Reanimator, which recently...
I thought you were going to say because he is a possibility he can be reanimated by Dr. Herbert West.
But no, no! Oh, God. Show already got tasteless. Oh, Jesus.
Okay, sorry, I am literally half asleep. I've had a very big morning. And... I'm think Vince would have enjoyed that joke anyway.
Oh, so, of course, of course. But recently given probably a better release than it deserves, Bride of Reanimator.
That's very true. Very true.
And even like Bride of Reanimator, the sequel to Reanimator, directed by Brian Usna. And Arrow gives Usna's like classic movies a really royal treatment because Society, his first directorial film, got a similar release where it was in a really nice packaging. It had a comic book packaged with it the way this one did.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of Brian Usna's early work. Okay. And, you know, his effect, the Screaming Mad George effects.
Did you like the original Reanimator?
Love it. Okay. I've seen it. Seen it more times than I can count. It's one of my favorite zombie movies.
Cool.
Bride of Reanimator, it's a sequel. It wasn't, the original was directed by Stuart Gordon. This one was directed by its producer, Brian Usna.
Yeah.
And it features a lot of the same cast. It was not really available in a decent DVD for a long time.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a minute once you finished. Yeah.
Okay. But Arrow just put out an incredible release of it. Like,
it's stunning.
I mean, amazing. Like, it's so much better than you could. It's even better than any release of Reanimator, honestly.
Yeah.
In terms of just like bells and whistles and just presentation, you know.
I'll get to that as well in a second. I think the Americans have been stiffed quite a bit with the.
Okay, so I'm talking about Region 1, so, right. You know, I'm not as familiar with the rest of the world. But, like, I remember getting Bride of Reanimator, and it was like a full screen, like, R-rated cut, and it just sucked. The release, the picture was terrible.
Yep.
You know, it was cropped. It just looked like shit. And that was the only version I had seen for a long time. So getting to see this unrated version was kind of a treat.
Yeah, it was.
Had you seen this before, Stu?
Yes, I had. Only once before. I own all three Reanimator films. Now, going back to...
Beyond Reanimator on DVD.
Yeah, I've had that for a number of years, and I really enjoy it.
Since college. Oh, geez.
Yeah. Now, Reanimator over here in Australia, and I believe the UK... In Australia, JB Hi-Fi released an exclusive of it, limited to 1,000 copies only, which they're starting to do quite a bit of. They did it with the Night of the Living Dead one, which I picked up the other day, which features a 1968 cut.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
On one disc, and the other one is the 1990 remake with a bunch of extras on it, which are exclusive to that that Blu-ray. And, yeah, they're starting to do that, and that was limited to 2,300. But the Reanimator one was limited to 1,000. That was a two-disc effort. Disc one was the theatrical cut, which runs 87 minutes with a bunch of extras. And the second disc is one called the Integral Cut, which is 104 minutes long with a bunch of extras on it as well. So that is available over here now, not packaged together, but you can buy them... In separate editions, the theatrical and integral, quite readily available over here. In the UK, I believe the same thing was done. Whether it was done via Arrow, I don't know. I don't think so. Now, getting over to Bride of Reanimator. It was released here on DVD by Umbrella in, I believe, 2005. I think it was 2005. And it had a bunch of extras on it, a couple of audio commentaries, a couple of deleted scenes, and a little making of thingy, which are all on the Arrow one, so there's nothing that I need to hang on to that disc for. But the problem was that the transfer was probably the worst Umbrella's ever done. They're noted for doing pretty good efforts, but this one was just hideous. It was literally ripped from the Laserdisc. And not even anamorphic widescreen. It's just... I put it on the other day to up against the Arrow release, and I was like, you can't even compare it, you know.
Yeah,
I was thinking of popping it on eBay for $5. You know what? I couldn't have the heart to sell it. It's If someone said, look, I really want it, I don't care if the quality's bad, I'd say, look, take it. I'd feel bad selling it to someone for $5. It's just, it is that bad.
Yeah.
It is that bad.
It's one of those things where it's like you feel like you're screwing somebody by making them pay money.
Totally. Totally. Now, you said you pre-ordered this. So did I back in, I think it was January. When it was announced, I'm like, okay, I'm just
pre-ordering. Yeah, Arrow announced a ton of stuff in January, like Dillinger and this and, you know, a bunch of Yakuza stuff and a bunch of crazy Greek stuff and, you know, all kinds of shit. So I was, going through the releases and kind of picking, okay, which ones do I just have to have? And I just pre-ordered some of them, like this one in Dillinger.
Yeah.
But I was excited because I just had never seen a good copy of Bride of Reanimator. You know, I've seen Beyond Reanimator, which also has an Arrow edition, by the way.
Does it?
Yeah, it has a DVD edition.
Not a Blu-ray yet.
Not a Blu-ray.
No, I'm waiting on that one.
Which, Beyond Reanimator came much later and is it's a little wackier. You know?
Yeah, it really is, yeah. Isn't that one set in the prison or something like that?
Yeah, that's the prison one. That's the one where Herbert goes to prison.
Yeah. But now we should note that there is two lots of releases on this, both identical. Obviously, you got yours from the Arrow US, correct?
Yes.
Right. Theirs is limited to 5,000 copies, which is the three-disc effort along with the comic book in there and the packaging and all that sort of stuff. Now, the three discs are the theatrical cut, the unrated cut, which is exactly the same running time, but what they are altered shots.
Okay.
So there's a lot less cutaways in the unrated as there is compared to the rated, R-rated.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I did a bit of research on this.
It's been forever since I've seen the R-rated cut, so I wouldn't have known what the difference was.
It's more, like less gore, but same running time on the R-rated. You know, it's filled in with a lot of cutaways and all.
There's a lot of people looking shocked at
what you're saying. Yes, pretty much, yeah. But also, Arrow UK had the same identical one as the US one, and theirs was limited to 3,000. Now, I bought mine from Arrow in Amazon UK, I should say, because I'm like, oh, well, I thought these are going to be numbered, and they're going to be like a lower number because it's a lower quantity of them, but that was not the case. And also, it worked out to be about $10 to $11 cheaper for me to do that, and it takes less than a week to get here from the UK. I'm like, cool, I'll go for that one. So I ordered that. However, those of you who follow me on social media would know that I received a copy in the mail, very poorly packed from Amazon, which is very odd for them.
Now, the
casing.
I saw you post about this.
Yes, yeah. And there was a crease along the top, but more so a crease along the spine of the case that holds the three discs in it, which was just ugly. I'm not happy about it at all.
Here's the thing. I've bought Criterion editions from stores. Yeah. And it's been a thing where, I got a copy of The Freshman from Movie Trading Company.
Right.
And the person goes and gets it out of a case.
Yeah.
And then they get it and they check you out. And I was walking out and I was like, this case, you know, it had like dents in it, like it had been dropped a few times.
Oh, boy.
And I was sitting there going, I don't want to look like I'm severely autistic and just like this OCD.
No, but I don't believe that's the case. Yeah.
But I walked back in and I said, hey, can you get me one can you get me another one from the case? Because this is just, this is kind of beat up.
Can you give me one that doesn't look like an elephant stomped all over it?
Well, and it wasn't even that bad, but it was, you know, it was enough to where like, I was like,
You and I are collectors, and the people who the average Joes that just sell the shit don't care and don't understand.
No, they don't. So I definitely understand when you say you got a one that was where the packaging was screwed up. Because a lot of people in this day where physical media, nobody gives a shit about it anymore.
Yeah.
It seems strange, but you're like, this is on my shelf. I like my shelf to look nice, and I don't want a beat up copy on there. You know, I want one that looks great, you know?
That's right. So what I did was I was not impressed, but not infuriated. I got straight onto Amazon UK, like literally straight onto them. Went to their contact us section and got someone via live chat. Now, in all honesty, they couldn't have been any better. They were like, okay. First off, they initially offered me £5 off to see if the disc. I said, this worked fine from what I can see. I haven't watched it all. So, well, we're giving you, we'll only give you a £5 rebate. I said, no, I want a replacement.
Yeah.
I want the full thing replaced.
Well, and here's the thing, when you're paying for one of these editions, you're also paying for the packaging.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it better be in good shape.
You know, if this was if it came in a standard Amaray case, I could care less.
Yeah, you can replace those.
Oh, God, yeah. Easy.
Yeah, but when it's that custom casing, you can't replace it, you know? If you have one of those Criterion cases, because Criterion has their Amaray case.
Yes.
You can go on and get, as many replacement cases as you want for cheap on their site,
Yeah, that's right.
And even for some of their releases that, where the packaging wasn't so great, they have, an Amaray version you can get, a replacement case.
Right.
So
anyway, the guy was like, okay, I've just issued a replacement for you to be sent out. And I said, okay, what do I do about this one? Do I mail it back to you? Is it a free post? He goes, nah, you're willing to do what you want. He goes, you can dispose of it if you want, or just hang on to it and keep it. We'll send you another one in the mail. I'm like, well, I'm not going to throw it out, for fuck's sake, because...
Yeah.
Amazon
can be pretty cool. I got a warped record from them one time.
Right.
And I just said, hey, this record's really warped and it's kind of unplayable. And they were like, all right, we'll send you a new one. And I was like, they didn't really make me send back the replacement, the other copy. They were just like, who cares?
Really cool.
So I was like, that's nice.
Yeah, so they issued a replacement and it came in the mail yesterday. And same thing again. Same fucking spots.
Oh, really?
I'm like, all right, okay. So I did a bit of research. Quickly, I just did a bit of research, and he goes, there are ways that you can iron them out. Just get the area that's affected, get something that's very heavy and flat, which actually I grabbed my Planet of the Apes 40th Anniversary Evolution box, which weighs about 16 friggin' pounds. It's enormous. And just popped it down and managed to flatten it out somewhat. But the other one I haven't opened, so it's unopened. So I'll be hanging on to that. And if the disc and this one are fine, I'll be hanging on to that and... You'll see it on eBay sometime soon. And I mean, shit, if I can get my $40 back or $38 back, whatever I pay for the initial one, hell, it's paid for itself. The replacement is.
Yeah. So, fortunately, I didn't. My mine came in looking just fine, thankfully.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah, well, you're very lucky. Yeah, I suppose yours is coming from the US, whereas mine's coming from halfway around the world,
So. Right. I mean, yeah, yours says to fly over on a ship with a bunch of prisoners and,
Yeah. Delivered by a bunch of parcel drivers who don't give a shit. Who drop it at your front door, literally on your front doorstep. So if I hadn't seen him while I was in the living room watching some sport, I would have just walked outside and stood right on the fucking thing. So I'm like, just wake up. Seriously, man, wake up. There's a spot for you. Anyone who knows my house knows there's a spot where you can just place a parcels fucking next to the door. But no, he drops it on the front doorstep. I'm like, fuck with it. So I'm now honestly, mate, looking at the creases, they don't bug me so much, but get a free replacement. But so getting back to it, the packaging on this thing, as Hunter said, is outstanding.
Yes,
way too good for what the film really is. I mean, I like the film.
I like the film, but I mean, it's even the booklet's kind of it's not as good as the original. I was reading the essay in there, and they even talked about the film's flaws.
Yeah. I can tell you the one flaw that it started off with, Menachem Golan. Because wasn't this a 21st century? No, I'm sorry. That was Night of the Living Dead. Wrong film.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I didn't know Cain had anything to do with this.
No. Wrong film. I told you guys, I'm half asleep. No, I was looking at the Night of the Living Dead one last night. Yeah, that's a 21st century Menachem Golan production.
It's was he one of the Nicaraguan rebels or something?
No. Yeah, but, there's a lot of Chinese food going around in that film set. Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the movie, but there's a few things about it. It talks about the movie is a little kind of narratively incoherent. The movie starts out where in Nicaragua, there's a war going on, and Herbert West and Dan are, medics, I guess, but they're using it for their experiments to reanimate the dead. And I was sitting there going, as I recall, Herbert West was killed at the end of the first movie.
I know, right?
He was strangled by living intestines.
Yeah.
And you know, it ends with Dan reanimating his girlfriend. And then here they are. They're just in South America reanimating corpses and shooting them in the head. But I do say that that scene is taken from Lovecraft's story.
Is it really? Okay.
Yeah, there's a scene where – and it's World War One, but there's a scene where Herbert West and his partner go to World War One, and they're, you know, conducting their experiments like that in that sort of setting. And also the laboratory Herbert sets up in the crypt that's connected to a crypt.
Yeah.
That's also taken from the story. So there are plot elements that borrow from Lovecraft's story a little more explicitly than Stuart Gordon's film, which was sort of, you know, a concept only adaptation. Yeah. You know, it kind of captured because Lovecraft's story, Herbert West Reanimator, was kind of a sort of phantasmagorical parody of Frankenstein.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And you know, so Stuart Gordon was kind of capturing that it was a parody and all that, but the plot was simplified and condensed quite a bit. And here they kind of borrow more elements from that story that Stuart Gordon's film didn't touch on.
Brighter Reanimator is missing Stuart Gordon's touch, though.
It really is. And I love Brian Usna's movies because I think he is capable of making crazy, gory movies. You know, Bride of Reanimator is more bonkers than this is, even though it's cheaper to look at, mm-hmm. I think. But there's something about Gordon's film that is just utterly insane. Like, there's no moment in Bride of Reanimator that matches the cat scene.
No.
You know, the cat scene in Reanimator is so hair-raising and so, like, you watch it and you can feel cat claws digging into your back. And, you know, but it's so simple. It's so, like, it's such a simple, low-budget piece of filmmaking. Yeah. But it's so intense. And, you know, Bride of Reanimator, it just doesn't have, like, it has moments of madness. Like, at the end when they break through the crypt and all of Herbert's little flesh creatures come out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, whoa! Yeah. You know, that scene and, like, a lot of the stuff at the end is pretty crazy. Yeah. And I love a lot of the little Screaming Mad George creatures, like the dog with the human arm and little fingers that are, like, Cousin It, like, tied together with a little eyeball.
Yeah, that thing with the four fingers and the eyeball was that was a pretty cool scene. I enjoyed that with the lieutenant in the house when he's sort of probing him to see, you know, what's going on with the missing body parts. And,
I guess we should set up the plot a little bit. It's like Herbert and Dan, you know, they go out to war and then they're back at Miskatonic University and they continue conducting their experiments. Really, the plot's pretty simple. And then they just they start building a woman with the heart of Dan. With the heart of Meg, his girl who died at the end of the last movie.
Yeah.
So they're kind of trying to resurrect Dan's old flame. And meanwhile, he's, you know, also falling for, you know, this Latin American girl. Brian Usna makes a lot of movies with Latin American funding. So you see that a lot in his movies.
Well, yeah, well, obviously with Beyond as well is a Latin American film, isn't it?
Yeah, Beyond is mostly dubbed. Like a lot of the people in it are, you know, Spanish speaking. I think it was made in Spain, actually.
I think you're right. I'm confusing
it a bit because I know the company he made Beyond with was Fantastic Factory, his sort of short-lived production company, and they did movies like Beyond Reanimator. They did this comic book adaptation of Faust, this superhero called Faust, with Jeffrey Combs, who plays Herbert West. And that's another kind of crazy movie with some Screaming Mad George effects. But there was a bit where Brian Usna. Oh, and Dagon was another one, the Stuart Gordon film.
I haven't seen a lot of Jeffrey Combs in other things, to be honest with you.
He's been in Star Trek. He's been in Babylon 5. He's done a lot of TV stuff. He was in Peter Jackson's The Frighteners.
So he was. I've not seen that for many, many years.
Yeah, he plays this sort of crazy Nazi detective in it. he's one of those guys who pops up every now and then. I haven't seen him in anything lately. But, he's one of those guys who kind of – he shows up in a lot of television.
I do remember the woman in this film, I think Kathleen Kinmont. I remember seeing her only in Halloween 4.
Okay.
If you remember her. But
she looked it looks like Jeffrey Combs has been in Gotham recently.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, been many, many years since I've seen Bright Reanimator. It was basically like a new movie to me. And, you know, when you said opening scene of the head of Dr. Hill?
Yeah, Dr. Hill.
Dr. Hill going, "Worst, you bastard." I'm like, oh, God.
You bastard.
we're on now. This is going to be some fun. But, I mean, yeah, I'll get to my ratings later. But, I mean, overall, I enjoyed it more than I did the first time around. I mean, the first time around, I was really, really let down. But I think a lot of that had to do with the transfer of the film. I'm like, this is just
unbelievable. Yeah, it didn't do it any favors, I'm sure.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right. Arrow pulled out the stops for this transfer. It's freaking incredible.
It's amazing. I mean, it's so lovingly done. Like they really have it. Like I'm kind of wondering when's the Return of the Living Dead 3 edition gonna come out? Like,
yeah,
which is another Brian Usna man resurrecting his girlfriend movie. Yeah.
Have we got Return of the Living Dead 2 yet on Blu-ray? I've got the first one.
That's a good question. I've never seen Return of the Living Dead 2.
It's okay.
I've always heard it was like people always said, "Oh, avoid that one. It's really bad."
It's okay. It's not too bad. But like Bright Reanimator, I told you this time around. I was just sitting there in wonderment, going, "This is incredible the way this looks for a film shot on a low budget. It looks as good as they could possibly do." I mean, had this been released, I mean. This has sort of been bastardized on home video because, as you said earlier, it's not really seen that many home releases. It's not the sort of title that got released now every few years on DVD or VHS
in fact, in the day. I never thought it would get re-released again. I thought it was just, you know, if you wanted it, you had to hunt down the shitty DVD editions or the maybe halfway decent ones that are out of print or something.
The Laserdisc version of it.
Looks like Return of the Living Dead 2 is not on Blu-ray.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, yeah. I'm sure it'll turn up, but yeah, it's not one of those titles that got re-released very often at all. So it became one of those, you know, real oddities out there. It's like, oh, you know, I'm sure it would have even probably played in the you know, the bootleg circuit for quite a while. You know, you would have had to sort of hunt it down because it was that hard to find. Kind of like a Fright Night Part 2. You know, it's out there if you can find a widescreen version. It's just good luck trying to find it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is as good as we're going to see it for Bright Reanimator. I'm just stunned how good it looks. I really am stunned.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's got some problems, but you know, it's if you're a fan of Reanimator, if you're a fan of Brian Usna, you know, it's you get a lot of wackiness in this movie, and it has effects by Screaming Mad George,
yeah,
who is, you know, he is a special effects guy who, when you see his work, you know it's him because his stuff is so out there and crazy, like the little finger monster with the eyeball, like the dog with the arm, the all the crazy bizarre monsters Herbert makes in this movie,
and the bat sequence as well.
But by the way, one of my favorite things about this movie is how Herbert sort of is so unfeeling towards everything. Like he's turned this cop's wife into like this drooling monster.
Oh my God, that was horrible, that scene when that's yeah,
this cop is understandably has an axe to grind, you know.
Yeah,
and but so when the cop is attacking them, Herbert suggests that this guy beat his wife, and that's why his wife ended up in the hospital. And when Dan's having a showdown with him, when his partner Dan Kane is having a showdown with him, he goes, "He's a wife beater, Dan."
That's right.
He's a wife. That's my favorite line in the movie. He's a wife beater, Dan.
Yeah. You know what? You know what, mate? The only thing I took away from this, like I said, I enjoyed it more this time around. It's not a great movie, like you said. It probably felt like it was about 10 minutes too long.
Yeah, I thought it was too long as well. It's like an hour 40. It should have been like maybe an hour 30.
Yeah.
I think...
just a bit of tightening up here and there would have been.
But it has like some really great subtle humor, like when the Bride of Reanimator, like her head starts to remove itself from the body.
Yeah,
Herbert goes, make a note of it, Dan. Tissue rejection.
Yeah.
I mean, keep studying.
Yeah, I mean, they're ramping up the this felt more comical than the first one to me.
It did. I think the first one's comical, but it's sort of like it's funny and scary at the same time.
Yeah.
Like cat scene. It's harrowing, but it's also kind of funny because it's so fucking crazy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
There's also the scene where Dr. Hill's severed head is like trying to give, you know, cunnilingus to the girl, head, you know, yeah. Like, you know, it's funny, but it's also kind of so fucked up. You're like,
yeah, but there was also like that. And for instance, with the humor in this one, there was that scene where near the start where Dr. West is in that, I don't know, that laboratory, and there's all his body parts in there, and he finds Dr. Hill's head, and he goes, oh, lovely, talking to him, he goes, you literally are a nobody.
He's like, you are a dead head.
You are a dead head. You are literally a nobody.
And he smacks him with a severed arm.
Yeah.
And I love, because Dr. Hill, he gets bat wings sewn to his head. He's flying around.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's like, and he's flying around. He goes, West, you stupid biped.
Yeah. I mean, that bat scene as well was pretty... I think that was their attempt at trying to do the cat scene, was the one with the bat, and the second one with
There's a lot of like little like just what one thing that's different about this movie is just all the crazy monsters. You didn't get that in the first movie. In the first movie, you had the bodies waking up screaming and smashing everything, yeah, which was awesome. But that was one thing I liked about this, was that, like, you know, Herbert would sew like an arm onto a dead dog, and then the dead dog would come alive and start pulling people down with its arm.
The wow factor of the first one was the actual reanimation itself. The wow absolutely factor. With kind of the second one, it's like, okay, everyone knows about the reanimation. Now we've got to shock them some more. You know, it's yeah.
Dan calls it his crazy doodlings.
He was certainly more maniacal in this second one here, Dr. West, than he was in the first one.
But you kind of sit there and look at Dan and go, why are you still hanging out with this guy?
I know. He feels like some sort of Stockholm syndrome. He's stuck with Dr. West. He's like,
oh, well, I'm here. Like, one thing the booklet talked about was how the script kind of doesn't really make a ton of sense. You know? No. Like, Dan's always hanging out with Herbert, even though Herbert's – like, we've established Dan thinks Herbert's fucking crazy. But – for some reason, he hangs out with him anyway, and he brings his girls home to Herbert's house where he's conducting insane experiments on the girl's dead dog. Yeah. How's this going to go?
It's almost like a sort of homoeroticism on Dr. West with Dan. You know,
Dan's shirtless most of the movie.
Well, yeah, really. And, you know, Dr. West has no interest in women, and, you know, he's like, oh, why are you moving out? You know, what about our experiments? And just,
yeah, he's always like, Dan, you know we are... we are on the cusp of something great, Dan.
Yeah.
You can't quit now.
Yeah.
Like, he's always convincing Dan to stay, but he's always like, Dan, you have to stay. And Dan's like, Yeah, okay. You know, you've nearly gotten me in deep legal trouble a few times, and we've killed a ton of people, but why not? I'll stay.
Yeah, I'll stick around. Yeah.
No worries. Yeah. But and I also love the bride creature. They make her from a bunch of different pieces, like the feet of a ballet dancer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, the feet of the ballet
dancer.
The
legs of a hooker. How many men have her legs been wrapped around? Yeah. And the heart of Meg. You know?
Did this film remind you a bit of – you ever seen the movie Frankenhooker?
No, but I've always wanted to.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit of this. I mean, it's markedly different, but I mean the actual concept of, you know, Frankensteining a woman, and, you know, with a hooker as well in yeah, it just reminded me a bit of that.
And I like the design of her with like the little, like, just all the metal they had hooked onto her and stuff.
And
Dan having to choose between her and his hot Latin American girlfriend. It's like, oh, seriously? Are we really? Do you really have to choose between this rotting corpse?
Yeah. And this
and this stunning
fucking
girl.
Yeah. Italian. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, Italian or whatever she was. I don't know.
But the thing, I mean, one of the things that, and going back to the original Reanimator, is, which I thought had a lot of balls, was literally ripping off the Psycho. music for the opening theme.
Oh, absolutely. Albert Band, the brother of Charles Band.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, his score is, you know, it's basically a Bernard Herrmann ripoff, but it works.
Yeah, it's not mildly derivative. It's a ripoff of...
It is a ripoff, but you're kind of like, meh, you know.
And they played it to the nth degree in this film. I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it even had a similar, like, opening credits to the original, like, yeah, with the human anatomy flying by and all that.
But, I mean, I was wondering when I was watching this and I was hearing the theme. I'm going, oh, there's that Bernard Herrmann theme again from Psycho. I wonder how many, sort of say, teenagers who are starting to get into films and, you know, probably gravitating towards horror, heard that theme, had no idea what it was, then went back and then watched Psycho later on and said, oh, that's the... Reanimator theme, but you know, obviously it's the other way around.
Yeah, I'm sure they heard, because anybody who gets into film comes across Psycho. I mean, that's
they do, you know, sometime or another.
So right. I think eventually, you know, if you saw Reanimator first, you figure it out. Eventually, you come across Psycho and you go, oh,
yeah,
that's where they pulled that from.
Yeah, that's right. Because you probably find younger people these days would sort of more tend to watch a film that's in color, even if it's an 80s movie, than they would, you know, a black and white film from 1960. So,
yeah, although I think Hitchcock, people kind of feel obligated to check his work out, you know, because it's Psycho, it's Hitchcock, you know, you got to see it. Although some people, I think there's also people who think, well, I know the shower scene, so I know the movie, even though Psycho's, you know, has more to it than that.
I'm not talking film aficionados. I'm talking about people just finding their feet, you know, with the horror genre, and
sure,
you know,
sure,
yeah. But I'm just curious if that's ever happened. You know, probably here and there, but it wouldn't be something that happens frequently. It would just be one or less occasional things. But anything else you can take away from this, mate? I mean, there's not a lot to it.
It's Bride of Reanimator, so it's Reanimator, Bride of Frankenstein. It's but with that Brian Usna flesh body horror twist, you know, because I think as far as body horror goes, like, you know, everybody talks about Cronenberg, but I think Brian Usna is one of the great body horror directors. You know, like Society is a great body horror flick with the crazy orgy at the end with the like head coming out of the ass. You're right, I am a butthead.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Society?
No, I have not. No,
oh
no.
God, we got to do that movie sometime. Because it's the movie Usna did before this, although it didn't come out till after Bride of Reanimator. It has effects by Screaming Mad George, and it is an absolutely insane movie, like just totally nuts. And the Arrow edition of it is phenomenal. That's a great body horror flick. And it has the son of Michael Myers from Halloween 2, Dick Warlock, his son, what's his name? I forget, but he stars in it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, Dick Warlock's son plays the lead.
Very nice.
If you want to see a great, like, that's my favorite Brian Usna movie is Society.
Oh, more so than Reanimator.
Oh, well, Brian Usna did Bride of Reanimator. He didn't do the original.
Oh, right. Oh, you're talking about actually directing the title.
Yeah. Stuart Gordon's Reanimator is, you know, that's Stuart Gordon's best movie by far.
Mm.
And, you know, Stuart Gordon's made some really good movies. He's made some really shitty movies. If John was here, he would list a bunch of them off. But
well, the thing is, you know, what had me thinking as well was John not here this time around. What are we talking? Horror movie. John... Last time, not here. What we talk? Horror movie.
So John hates horror movies now.
It's pretty common knowledge. John hates horror movies. So we're like, where's John? He's not coming this week. Let's do a horror movie, Yana.
Yeah, let's do a horror movie. he's seen Kvelertak now, so the joke's on us because that's a great band. But
I've never heard of it. When I saw that message, I'm like, who the fruitnik is this band?
Oh, yeah. You got to check them out. They're pretty awesome. They're like... If let's say a band wanted to play black metal, but they also really like Kiss and like punk rock and stuff, so it's like a black metal band that wants to rock really hard. You know?
Really?
Yeah, it's like a weird mix of like black metal and like no frills rock and roll. It's really cool. Like I was kind of shocked that John likes them, but it also made
sense. Yeah, really.
You know, does that, you know, it also made sense because it rocks so hard. I was like, yeah, you know what? That makes sense that John would like Cavalier Tech.
I thought it'd be rocking out with James Ellroy.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, John's not the only person having celebrity rendezvous lately.
Ah, yeah, I saw you with Whit Stillman.
Yeah, I met Whit Stillman at a cocktail party the other night.
Jesus.
Yeah, a friend of my parents actually texted me and she said, "Hunter, do you want to meet Whit Stillman?" I said, "Yes." And she said, "We're having a cocktail party tomorrow night to, you know, it was a little, his new film was showing at a film festival in Dallas and my mom's friends on the board and they were having like a get together." And so she said, "Come over." And nobody at this party knew who the fuck he was.
I mean, I know the name. I would never have.
I was talking with Whit Stillman and he was just like, "Oh, so what do you do?" And we were just talking for a little bit. And I said, "Yeah." And before I left, I said, "I just want to let you know, like, you know, some of my friends in Memphis, we like bonded over your films and, you know, I own most of the stuff you've done on Blu-ray." And he goes, "Well, that's better than me."
Did you ask him why The Last Days of Disco was such a fucking shit movie?
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, man. It was like, give me a break. I mean, Studio 54 was bad enough, but Last Days of Disco, I was like,
"Oh, I like that movie." And his best movies are Metropolitan and Barcelona. They're great. But I love Whit Stillman, and you know, Whit Stillman and Terrence Malick are two like kind of reclusive directors that I've met. So it's pretty cool that I've gotten to meet both of them. But Bride of Reanimator, though, if you're a fan of Reanimator, if you're a fan of Brian Usna, I think this is an edition worth owning.
Yeah.
Even though it's not cheap. You know, now it's
I mean, for our Australian listeners, it's probably set you back about, if you get a move on and pick it up, I think Amazon UK still have some available, but I think dare say going very, very quickly.
They're going for 60 on Amazon US right now.
Oh, shit, 60. Really?
Yeah, more than I paid for it.
They're still going for about 18 quid on Amazon UK. Australian bucks probably set you back about 38, including your freight.
Yeah, these Arrow editions, they, you know, print limited copies and they get snatched up pretty quick.
Well, funny you should mention that. There was a couple of things. I was looking up rare titles, you know, just general rare Blu-ray titles that are out there. And one of the most heavily sought after is the Battle Royale box that you and I own.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, that's like one of the
one I got.
Yes, so it was. Oh shit! I turned you on to Arrow, Mr.
You did.
Arrow.
You did turn me on. You did. You created Mr. Arrow.
I'm like the Herbert West of you know.
I'm the bride to your
the bride of Arrow Animator. Yeah.
The bride of Arrow Animator.
But yeah, so that's one of the sought after ones, and the one of the other ones is the other one of the very few other Arrow titles at home, which is the complete Dr. Fibes collection box.
Oh, that's cool. I don't have that one.
That's long gone now. That's now going for £100, I think, you pick it up for. Or I paid £20. I pre-ordered it. I was like, okay, both Dr. Fibes films. Not that many extras, though. Not a great deal, but there is a 200-page book in there, which is fucking insane book. It's either 100 or 200 pages. It's enormous. I know that much.
The only other UK Arrow title I own is Full Cheese the Beyond. I have that one on Blu-ray.
Real? Yeah, see, there's a couple of companies over here that now license stuff from Arrow and release it under their own banner, but I think they don't always get the extras. Some I know Full Cheese, a lot of the Full Cheese stuff, House by the Cemetery, is that one of his?
Yes.
Right, that has all the Arrow. Is that an Arrow title? Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Arrow has put it out, yes.
Yeah, they got all the Arrow features on that over here under the Cinema Cult label. And actually, yeah, as we speak, JB Hi-Fi has a lot of those going for $6.98, and I think House by the Cemetery is one of them. So I will grab that tonight along with the Hammer Curse of the Werewolf with Oliver Reed going for $6.98. So I'll be
grabbing that. A recent Arrow title I picked up was the Stuff, the Larry Cohen.
Yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, I picked that one up too recently.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I'm not that big on Larry Cohen. I've got the
he's hit or miss for me, but the stuff is fun. Anything he does with Michael Moriarty, I enjoy because Michael Moriarty just gives really unhinged, crazy performances with him.
God, like Q the Winged Serpent. I remember.
I love Q. I love that movie.
It's okay. I remember seeing it on VHS way back then. I'm old. Way back when.
Oh God. Yeah, we have to keep I'm old alive now.
Now that D's not doing it. Yeah. To hell and back. Never get that.
Talked about that on the show?
To hell and back. Oh yeah.
No. How you successfully kind of quasi trolled D. Snyder.
I think I did on the. I think we did on the.
Okay. Will it rock me like to hell and back? Respond seriously. I was like, really,
poor D. He doesn't get it. That's all. It's just he gets what he deserves. So anyway, Cinema Cult is starting to release a whole bunch of stuff, and under the Arrow, license from Arrow. But if I can, I'd rather get the actual Arrow titles. And if you look on Amazon UK, they do sometimes have deals where you get 3 for $20 of Arrow, and it's like that's pretty cheap. £3 for £20, it is.
They're really like they've kind of replaced Criterion for me in terms of like their releases here because they put out such good editions of movies I like, you know.
Well, when I go on Blu-ray.com and usually on the front page they'll say, you know, Criterion announces July titles, and I'll think, well, I'll click on it and it's gonna be a complete waste of time. And I'm right. It's just like,
well, they've been doing a lot of double dipping lately. A lot of stuff they've already put out, like recently they put out Barcelona. Okay, I picked that one up because I love that movie. Yeah. But, they just announced Touch of Zen, and I bought the Masters of Cinema edition of it. So that's kind of a tough sell for me because, you know, I jumped for the Masters of Cinema one because, you know, they also put out Dragon Inn, another great King Who movie. And I was like, Criterion should have been putting out movies like that a long time ago. They're sort of late to the party, I think, with putting out Wuxia movies. The first one they put out.
Well, you're not going to double dip on that Zen movie. I mean, really?
Why? You know, I paid a lot of money for the. Like, John called it unaffordable. I'm sure I paid whatever he won't pay for it. So. But Dragon Inn was pretty cheap. I got that one on Blu-ray, and that's like that Dragon Inn is like the Fistful of Dollars of kung fu movies. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's one like. If it was more widely available, I would tell people to start their kung fu diet with that because it's even though it's not a Shaw Brothers or anything like that, it feels familiar enough to people who like spaghetti westerns and genre movies.
Yeah,
but it also has all the staples and trademarks of a good kung fu movie that will kind of set the tone for everything you watch after.
I'm curious if Arrow is going to do 7 Grandmasters.
I hope they do.
Or Masters of Cinema, one or the other.
Yeah, I think Arrow would do it. Well, I don't know. Arrow doesn't do a lot of kung fu. They mostly do like horror and
blaxploitation.
Yeah. Like they've put out some Pam Grier titles. They put out some Jack Hill titles. Mm. They put out like they put out like, you know, Dillinger recently.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was a very welcome one because I'm a big fan of that movie. But
yeah, I remember you saying from the Milius episode.
Yeah, I love that.
Way back when.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the one I want to get the most is the new Dolomite that's just come out on Blu-ray with a brand new print that they found under a 2K scan and documentaries and shit. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I got to have that one. Yeah, I need that.
Yeah. But you would think Arrow would put out kung fu stuff, but they, you know, you look at their catalog and you go, well, you know, they put out some Takashi Miike stuff, but it's not the kind of kung fu stuff that, like, you know, John likes, or that, you know, when you think of a kung fu movie, like they put out Deadly Outlaw Rekka, but that's kind of more of the Miike splatter stuff. Yeah. You know?
But the thing is as well, like people out there saying, oh, Arrow put that out. And I mean, yeah, you can request it, but they've got to license the film. If it's cost prohibitive to them, they ain't going to do it. You know, it's got to be something they're going to make money on and survive as a business.
Well, you know, I'm starting to see, like, as physical media declines, where we are starting to see that these boutique labels do well, like Arrow expanding to the US, Criterion is expanding to the UK.
That just gave Tom Jennings a hard-on, didn't it?
Oh, it did. Yeah, they've talked about it on their podcast. The Criterion UK, so it's Sony Presents Criterion, so they partnered with Sony on it. If that tells you anything about how well Criterion's doing, but and Criterion and Turner Classic Movies are launching a streaming service, so we're seeing these boutique labels really kind of doing well right now, even though physical media is on the decline. Like Best Buy is going to stop carrying movies within the year, you know, within a year from now.
Well, I think you may be in the same boat as myself, man. I have to pull an Eddie Trunk here, man, because I just like that physical media. It's like I want to. You know,
I can't watch it in my car.
Can't watch it in your car. Can't hold a book in your hands when it's on a digital format in a PDF.
Yeah.
can't read a PDF in the toilet, man. How can you? So I got to hold the physical.
I got the Bride of Reanimator set. Jeffrey Combs is a dear friend.
And I just got a text from Dr. Carl Hill, and he was saying,
to be a noise. Every time Eddie Trunk drops a name, there needs to be like a thud, you know?
Be like a little ding, like ding, ding.
Ding.
Yeah. Ding. Actually, you know what we should do? Hey, Hunter, you know what we should do?
What?
We should take the episode, and this one drove me batshit nuts when I heard it. Was the one that Eddie Trunk did on his own with no guest.
I hated it. I
would love to take it, put it on YouTube, but in a corner, put a little counter. Every time a name is dropped, just like flash up. That thing will reach about 100. It was ridiculous.
It was insufferable.
It really was. Yeah.
It was like, you know, just him talking about how he's friends with all these people and all the favors they pulled for him. And it was just like, shut up.
And I was about to go to lunch with Slash's band. I got a text from Slash saying, no, come out for dinner. So we held off and we'd have to dinner with Slash.
And most bands wouldn't do that. You know, I know people are blowing them up, but most people wouldn't do that. And, you know, there are bands, I'm not going to name any names, but they kind of forget about you once they get big again.
Oh, wait. No, I got some info from Axel. I can't tell you. Yeah. I have to wait. I promised I'd keep my word. I can't tell you. I mean, I got a lot more information, but I have to
maintain my relationships with these people.
I mean, I feel like, saying, all right, Eddie, we got it. You said it once. You said it twice. You don't need to drag it in 15 times. You know shit. Bravo. But we don't. You know what? When it spills, it spills. When we know about it, we know about it. We don't give a fuck. What was the info? Oh, Axel's joined AC/DC. You know, that was getting telegraphed anyway
What you should have said, Eddie, was you didn't want to be the bearer of bad news.
Yeah, really.
but I will say I appreciate that he did an interview with the dude from Soul Asylum this week, because that's kind of a strange.
Yeah, I've heard it. I've got it downloaded, but I've not heard it yet.
Well, and it's not like, you know, going to stand out, but it did make me go, oh, Soul Asylum's put out two records since I checked in on them. I should probably go and see what they've been up to.
Yeah.
Because I love a lot of the Soul Asylum stuff. So really? I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah, they're one of those bands you wouldn't think I'd like, but they kind of remind me of Latter-day Replacements. Like, I like all that stuff. And I really enjoy Soil. Maybe it's the Kevin's – the guy who watched, you know – the I Can't Even Tell video directed by Kevin Smith.
Yeah, on Clerks, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. I just – so I was like, oh, you know, Soul Asylum's put out two albums since I checked in on The Silver Lining. I should go, you know, listen to some of that and see how it is. And you know, it sounds completely different. You know, the new record they did is much more upbeat than their other stuff.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway.
Speaking of upbeat records, I still need to hear Ace Frehley's Origins, and I'm really not in a hurry for it.
Yeah, well, you know, the Fire and Water video is it's pretty, I enjoyed Origins well enough. I think Ace is good at covers, but I think that video alone drags down the rating for me.
Yeah, it really does. I was like, so goddamn this is cheesy. Lame.
It's like, it's like if anybody wanted a Kiss reunion, this kills it.
Oh, well, there's been always, you know, I listen to my Kiss podcast, you know, my bipolar days that I actually do, then I don't. And I just like, I fuck Kiss, I can't be bothered with them. And next morning, it's like, I want to listen to Kiss podcast. So anyway.
I know. Stuart's always like, fuck this, these Kiss fans. And I'm like, yes, but you will still listen.
Oh, well, I am the confirmed the world's most bipolar Kiss fan.
Yeah.
Even though I don't have bipolar anyway, but when it comes to Kiss, I'm the most bipolar Kiss fan in the world. For instance, I mean, perfect example. I was watching the Fire and Water video on YouTube, and there's all these comments. Granted, keep in mind, this is very, very, very late at night when I did it. There's all these comments saying, oh, man, you know, Ace and Paul back together. This is awesome. And I just wrote, fuck.
Really?
Yeah, on the comments of the video, I'm like, oh, this is awesome, man. Oh, man, I can't believe I've got tears in my eyes. Ace and Paul. I'm like, I just wrote, fuck, this is lame. The comments, I'm like,
I kind of made me go like, okay, you know, stick a fork in it, guys. You know, like, we don't stop trying to look cool. You know, it's just, you know, it was like, I almost posted it and just wrote Granddad Rock.
Stick a fork, more like a stick an apple in Ace's mouth, mate. He's the size of a fucking house these days.
Yeah, he's big. Paul Stanley at least looks like he takes care of himself, you know.
Yeah. And now there was all this news about, you know, Paul tearing his pec, you know, so he's out of action for a few months. Ace can't tour no more, so it's a...
Well, Ace just, he had, like, health problems or something while he was on tour.
Yeah. It's not... Well, those of you who are out there clamoring for a Kiss reunion one more, just, come on, man, one more time. Not happening. No, it's not going to happen.
What you want it? Just no.
It's really... I mean, yeah, so Ace Frehley's origins. I mean, you know, I'm sure...
But, you know, I like Ace's covers. I think he's good at doing covers. So, you know, when he did an album of covers, I was like, sure, great, awesome, you know.
Has your Cheap Trick vinyl turned up yet?
Not yet. I don't think it's been pressed yet. I think it comes out next month.
Oh, okay, next month.
So, right. You know, I'm still waiting on it.
Nice.
But that new Cheap Trick, you know, it's fucking great.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic. But anyway, I think we've tapped out Bride of Free Animators too.
Yeah, I think it's done.
I think we're done. It's really not a movie you can say much about, but it's one that I was very happy to get, even though it's not like a great sequel. I mean, it's not like a great movie, but if you're a fan of the first one, it's fun. So what would you give it out of 10?
I am going to give this, I say like 6.5. I enjoyed it a lot more the second time around, but as you said, it's not a great movie, but it's not a stinker. I mean, I've seen worse sequels than this.
It's an enjoyably incoherent film, I think, because it's like Jeffrey Combs said that the movie was being rewritten constantly as they shot it. Like, they had no idea what they were going to make the next day.
Right.
And he said the film almost felt like The Bride. Like, it was just being pieced together.
It was being constructed as they went along.
Like, it's just so all over the place. But that's kind of the fun of it a little bit. Like, I was never bored, really. I mean,
No, that's true. You're right.
Like, my mind would wander during it, but I was never bored. And so I would give it a solid 6. Like, okay. I I'm not saying, you know, some people may say, oh, a 6, that's bad. It's above average. You know, a 5 to me is totally average, you know, unremarkable. Yeah. I think it's a solid 6. Like, it's flawed, but I would watch it again. If what I would do is I would show someone Reanimator and then follow it up with Bride, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily do this as a double, even a triple feature. I have to watch Beyond again. It's been a number of years.
Watching this has made me go, I want to watch that again and see if it holds up. Because I had fun watching that with, you know, the guy on our boards, Barolo Gavi, a.k.a. Morgan.
Hey.
He and I would watch that in college and get drunk and laugh our asses off. So.
Yeah. But let's say this, if you haven't already sort of worked out by now, the film, 6.5 from me, 6 from Hunter. The packaging by Arrow, though, and the quality, 10. Fucking 10, easily.
10
so
by far.
If you're if, really, by the time this drops, get onto Amazon UK. Now, this title is region free from Amazon UK.
Yeah, that's what's great about Arrow stuff is if you import it, it plays on your region 1 player. So.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're looking at getting it now, as Hunter said, from the US, it's starting to, you know, gain a bit of momentum, you know, dollar wise, whereas the Amazon UK, yeah, probably set you back about $40-$50. So get on it quick.
Cheaper, best one.
Yeah, because the box. If I got one complaint about the box, I'm still giving it a 10 out of 10. If I got one complaint about the box, it's a bit flimsy compared to the complete Dr. Fives box, which is rock solid, really. Oh well, really
the Battle Royale one, you could kill someone with.
Oh good lord, yeah, that was. That came via a fucking semi-trailer to my house.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's...
It really is, yeah.
All right, Stuart.
All right, mate.
All right.
We'll have to probably talk about Beyond Reanimator another time, or Society even.
Yeah, I want you to check that out because you need to see Society.
I'll tell you what, I got a good idea. What we'll do, right, is we'll tell John we're going to record on one particular day, and me and you quickly hook up behind his back another day and do it. And say, but we told you it was this day. Look, you were wrong.
John would probably assume that's what happened.
He's like, yeah, a couple of assholes. He did it behind my back.
He would know what happened. He would go. They fucked me.
Well, if John, if you want your horror fix, we're gonna be doing that. Rob Zombie 31. Sometime.
Yeah, we have to figure out a way to get him to do it. There's got to be some way. Well, maybe James Ellroy. We could pay James Ellroy to host a screening.
It's like, got to screen one of my earlier films. Oh, actually, Rob Zombie's the
And John stands up at the theater. No! James Judas!
You see this figure in the back with an overcoat and a hat going... And... Rob Zombie's 31 be followed up by Dangerous People. You got fucked over, John. Happy birthday, sucker.
Oh, my God.
All right, brother, let's call it a night, eh?
All right, eh? So midnightmoviecowboys.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review and a rating if you want to support the show.
YouTube, we're starting to pump them out of there as well.
Check us out on YouTube.
I'm going to start putting out some of the older episodes that seem to have broken links that you can't download, like the Kiss 4-hour Kiss episode we did.
Oh God,
where John was unhappy and got drunk progressively throughout the show. Yeah, but YouTube, iTunes, like you said, email us. Facebook, we're there. Twitter, we're there. And Stitcher and blah, whatever else.
All that good stuff. Let's say goodnight.
Flow Hive.
Adios and RIP Vince Rotolo.
RIP Vince.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Yeah.